Good morning, I'm Tommy Howe, and welcome to another edition of Tree Huggers International, a weekly natural science and environmental affairs program dedicated to the preservation of parks, wilderness, and special places. From the beaches to the mountains to the deserts, this is Tree Huggers International. Be careful and use this show with caution, because you might just learn something. As many of you are aware, we recently lost our friend, Jerry Shadd. Jerry was an astronomy professor and the chair of the physical sciences department at San Diego Mesa College. And along with being a highly regarded astronomical photographer and fan of the nighttime sky, Jerry was probably best known for the series of books he wrote on hiking and the outdoors of Southern California, particularly his classic, A Foot in a Field in San Diego County, first published in 1986. Jerry also wrote over 800 pieces for the Romarama column, which ran for 18 years at the San Diego Reader. Jerry wrote over a dozen other books, including A Foot in a Field volumes for Orange and Los Angeles counties, as well as books on bicycling and trail running. Sadly, Jerry was diagnosed with stage 4 cancer in March 2011 and received a terminal diagnosis in June 2011. He retired to his home on Cortez Hill with his wife, Peg, and set about putting his affairs in order. And through his illness, worked with Peg and the team at Wilderness Press, his longtime publisher, to complete what turned out to be his final book, 50 Best Short Hikes in San Diego. Jerry died on September 22nd. He was 61 years old. Too early. Far too early. But all who knew him, including Jerry himself, agreed he had lived a full and rich and immense life. I first interviewed Jerry in July 2008 and had him on the show again in July 2009 to talk about the newest edition of his book, A Foot in a Field in Los Angeles County. What follows are selections from those two interviews. If you've never heard them before and you're a Jerry Shadd fan, I hope you'll enjoy the conversations I've included from our two interviews. If you're already familiar with these shows, I invite you to enjoy them again in this revised setting on this special edition of Tree Huggers International. We at Tree Huggers International are honored and thrilled to have him joining us today. Jerry Shadd, welcome to Tree Huggers International.
And I'm delighted to be here.
It's very, very nice to have you today. Did the A Foot in a Field series come about from you taking notes on trails you would visit? Were there a lot of trails you first came in contact with when you were going to school at State?
Yes, well, at State, I was very interested in bicycling at that time. So I explored the county on two wheels. Then I sort of gradually got into hiking. I started off writing a bicycle book called 50 Southern California Bicycle Trips. Started that work in 1973, and the book was published in 1975. So that led into the same publisher asked me to do a San Diego Trails book, which was minimal compared to the current A Foot in a Field. And it was my attempt at being absolutely complete about covering every trail worth taking in San Diego County. It was my field day to basically go out and explore every trail of my fantasy, basically. So it was an excuse to do that, and I was actually working while I was doing it and having a good time.
Well, and I know A Foot in a Field in San Diego has been through a number of printings. It was first printed in 1986. But what did you have to do for the most recent edition, particularly after the 2003 fires? Was there a lot you had to go back and revise after that?
Right. The transition between the third and the fourth edition, which was completed last year, fourth edition came out in 2007, a major revision. Because for one thing, these fires, normally I don't pay too much attention to them in the chaparral zones because they'll come back in a few years. No sense in revising something that'll be out of date quickly. But Guimaca Rancho State Park and some of the other forested areas will never be the same. That required extensive revisions. And I added quite a few new trails in this new edition. By the way, there's 250 trips in the book now. Many of the new ones are on the urban wildland interface. The suburban cities in San Diego itself, you know, how it connects to the backcountry and the various open space preserves that have sort of come online in the last 10, 20 years. Many of my newer trips and the newer additions are in those areas, close to where people live.
Can you recommend a couple of good summertime trails, some good trails that we lowlanders can go to beat the heat? Are there any that are reasonably accessible?
Not too many, to be honest with you, but as high in elevation as possible. So Palomar Mountain State Park is great, Palomar area, Cuyamaca Rancho State Park, Julian. But confine your explorations to the early morning hours or afternoon after about 5 o'clock or so. It can be quite pleasant. Anywhere you are in the county, it's kind of hot in the middle of the day. And also your comments about what to bring are very important. You know, the water, the sunscreen, the sun shielding clothing, the hat.
One of the best trails I became aware of from your publications is Hot Springs Mountain in the Los Coyotes Indian Reservation near Warner Springs. And aside from the fact that it offers some pretty interesting, if kind of bizarre, geology with some sand here and there in the higher elevations, are there some other wild spots similar to the Los Coyotes on other reservations or just places in the county that you've been taken by surprise by?
Well, I should mention something about that particular site there. The reservation itself has been closed to hiking for a while, and this is why I took out many of the trips in the reservation in the current edition. I left in the Hot Springs Mountain trip in the hope that the Indians would open that up again to hiking use. You know, it's uncertain what will happen in the future. But in terms of, you were talking about sort of unexpected seeing sand. That is actually fairly common in the backcountry where we have these granitic mountains. The granite breaks down into its mineral crystals, creating what's called decomposed granite. Looks like sand, but it's really the debris from decomposed rocks.
It's not like those
sand piles.
Nothing
to do with beach sand.
Okay.
Although I have to say, some of those mineral grains work their way down the water courses and end up on San Diego's beaches. Or at least they used to before dams trapped them quite a bit.
Well, you know, I was thinking of that one area in Santa Cruz. I think it's in Henry Cowell Redwood State Park. And there's sand up on top of one of the mountains there. Of course, you're right by the ocean, so it tends to make sense.
Yes. And I remember writing a book about that area, too, in 1975. Santa Cruz Mountains, actually. Basically, that's sandstone, derived from sandstone.
Let me ask you this about Hot Springs Mountain. What mountain range is that? Because it's not part of the Palomars, and it doesn't seem to be part of the San Ysidros.
Yeah, it's, it would be generally called the San Ysidro Mountains, which is a not very well-known mountain range extending into Anza-Borrego Desert. Let's not put too fine a point on the naming of places, because the topography is complex in San Diego County. Some of the mountain ranges are well-defined, and others are very complex. And some map maker at one point may have labeled, you know, this particular ridge, that mountain range, and does it include the other spur ranges or whatever? Just consider it to be Hot Springs Mountain. And it's, the main thing about it is that it is the highest elevation in San Diego County. A little bit higher than Cuyamaca Peak, only about 20 feet higher than Cuyamaca Peak.
Not much, just a bit.
Mm-hmm.
Indian Head Peak.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a trail up Indian Head accessible from Borrego Palm Canyon?
There is a route that I describe in my book that's one of many, actually. Hikers have approached that mountain from different directions. No trail. It would be almost impossible to build a trail there without a lot of dynamiting. It's just a big pile of rocks, angular rocks. You just pick your way here and there, and you get to the top by various routes. So I described a little bit of a lengthy but not so steep route. But that's, you know, that's kind of professional territory out there. You don't want to be a casual hiker up on Indian Head Peak.
Santiago Peak and the Santa Ana Mountains in Orange County.
Yes.
This trailhead only seems to be accessible at the end of a maze of unpaved Forest Service roads in the Santa Anas. Are there some more accessible peak trailheads in the Santa Anas that lead to a similar elevation? How's that for a lengthy question?
Yeah, that's a lengthy one. Well, I mean, I think the most interesting way to hike up there is to, you know, rattle down the Trabuco Canyon Road, which is full of potholes and all. Park at the Holy Jim Trailhead and have a wonderful 4,000-mile gain hike where you see the different levels of vegetation and elevation. The easier way would probably be from the north, Silverado Canyon. There's a road that goes to the end of Silverado Canyon, a little community there, and then a Forest Service gate, which is sometimes open. So sometimes vehicles can drive up to, you know, pretty far up towards San Diego Peak, and then you get, then you're on just fire roads the rest of the way.
So you're probably better off stopping by the ranger station first to make
sure
you can access it.
Exactly, right. And, you know, you never know. Conditions could change. There could be fire controls in effect, you know, usage restrictions. There's storm damage in other parts of the year where it's, you know, rainy. So it always is good to check with the Forest Service. And what we're talking about here in Orange and San Diego County for National Forest is Cleveland National Forest.
When it came to writing A Foot in a Field in Orange County and for Los Angeles, that was a similar situation where the publisher approached you and said, hey, you know what, you ought to try writing some books about some of these areas.
Yeah, the current publisher, Wilderness Press, been excellent to work with. Got started on that. This was a success, and so then we moved on to Orange and Los Angeles County by mutual agreement.
In your 101 Hikes in Southern California book, you touch on some destinations in Riverside County, like the Santa Rosa Ecological Plateau, Mount San Jacinto, and some trails generally outside of the areas covered in your Foot in a Field series.
That's right.
Is there any chance you might have an installment for San Bernardino, Riverside, Ventura counties?
You're talking about the proposed A Foot in a Field in the Inland Empire, which has been on my mind for some time, and I've decided that I have enough of a challenge to keep track of approximately 600 trails throughout Southern California. To keep maintaining my guidebooks that already cover that. And I'm at an age such that, you know, I know these are lifetime efforts, and I don't want to pile another thing on top of it.
Somebody else can write
Somebody
that
else out there is the candidate. I really like Torrey Pines State Reserve, just because it's accessible to just about anywhere, quick to get there, not too crowded most of the time. And I just love bringing visitors there, you know, even those that don't hike. I mean, it's just this wonderful resource right in the middle of the urban part of the city, or it's become the urban part of the city. It's good year-round. You know, there's always something interesting to see. Fantastic flowers in the springtime. Fantastic views in the wintertime when the air dries out and is transparent. And even this summer, you know, relatively mild weather.
What is it about the change of seasons in Southern California that allows for the air to be so much more clean in the wintertime as opposed to the summertime when things can be a little hazy? When you see something off in the distance, you're almost surprised.
Well, the main thing is just that with the cooler air holds less moisture, there's less humidity. Yeah, of course, we have our smog issues, which have improved over the last couple of decades a lot, but there's still the moisture aspect. The ocean is fairly warm right now, you know, 70 degrees, and there's significant evaporation, and a lot of this haze we see is simply humidity. And the warmer the air, the more humid it's going to be in absolute terms.
Does it seem like there are more people on the trail now or less than, say, 10, 20 years ago?
Well, it depends where you're talking about. In Southern California, a whole lot more use, at least in San Diego County. Tremendous use of trails compared to, say, 30 years ago, when it was just in the early days of writing trail guidebooks. With respect to national parks and, you know, the Sierra, places like that, the use is constant or maybe going down a little bit. So in a way, it's encouraging because people are spending more time recreating in the areas where they live. And that means less use of resources, less use of gasoline and so forth. I mean, we have some great stuff around here. Even in urban San Diego, we have this network of canyons. You know, they're actually ravines, but there's a proposal to have a citywide, you know, Canyonlands Natural Park. And I know some of the folks are involved in that, and I think it's a wonderful effort. Why even get in a car to appreciate nature when it's right, you know, you're right on the rim of some canyon or other if you live in most places around San Diego? So there are neighborhood groups that are, you know, kind of focusing on certain canyons, and citywide, I hope to see this, that the neighbors get together and adopt their neighborhood open space.
That's great you brought up canyons. I used to live right by Maple Canyon on Bankers Hill.
Yeah. I run through that today since I live downtown now. So
yeah, one of my neighbors in Maple Canyon was an owl.
Yeah.
And it was great because I don't think there are too many mice in the neighborhood with the owl around.
Enough to
night.
Support one owl.
Yeah, exactly. Some of Jerry Shadd's most ardent fans may not have been aware of this, but Jerry's main passion, first and foremost, was astronomy. The planets, stars, constellations. I asked Jerry if there are still good places to see the nighttime sky around Southern California without significant light pollution.
Well, it's an ever-increasing problem, this light pollution. There is really almost no place in San Diego where you have a truly pristine sky. Once in a while, you can get that, say, up at the top of the Laguna Mountains when the marine layer comes in real thick and shields from the Los Angeles lights, San Diego lights. But the problem is that, you know, we have cities completely surrounding the dark sky areas in San Diego County. including Mexicali. You know, that place is a population is well over a million, and they are electrifying the place, you know, putting up streetlights like they never had 10 years ago. So it has its own dome of light. Even Coachella Valley, Palm Springs is getting to be quite a dome of light in the north. When it comes to sky conditions, Mount Laguna is the absolute best place in San Diego County. And over in the desert, it's some spots might be just a slight bit darker, particularly toward the west. If you really want to get dark skies, you have to head out toward the eastern Mojave Desert, Mojave National Preserve, Death Valley. Even Death Valley is getting some influence from, believe it or not, Las Vegas, you know, which is a big blip of light over there in the east. Or you could go south toward these, let's say the Sierra San Pedro Martir in Baja California, 100 and some miles south of the border, 8,000 feet. Beautiful skies down there.
Or, yeah, the Kelso Dunes. You wouldn't get any light from Barstow or anything floating
right
over there.
Right. Kelso Dunes is one of my favorite places, by the way, in the Mojave National Preserve. That being said, for most people, if they simply go out to, say, Mount Laguna, camp out there, or spend a be out there in the dark of the night, dark of the moon, they will be very surprised to see the Milky Way because so few people, and I'm talking about my students, and I poll them every time I have a class, an astronomy class, how many of you have seen the Milky Way? Well, over 30 years of time, it's gone from about 50% to maybe 10, 15%. I mean, literally, so few people that are living in cities have even seen the Milky Way, and it must be very puzzling to them. You know, what's this big deal about the starry sky? The other thing you have to consider is you want to find a site that has a reasonably open sky and not too forested. There are campgrounds up at Palomar Mountain, for example, Observatory Campground, Fry Creek Campground. Well, there's some interference with trees there, but On Mount Laguna, in particular, there's Laguna Campground, and at night you can walk out to, you know, the clearing there, part of the upper Laguna Meadow, has plenty of, you know, unobstructed skies, you might say, from there. Personally, what I like to do for stargazing in the summertime is go out to Anza Borrego. And I know it sounds crazy, but, you know, get out there at 5, 6 in the afternoon, camp at the foot of the mountains. The mountains are rising to the west, so the sun sets effectively in these places at about 6 in the evening. And it's warm, you know, maybe it's 95 degrees, maybe it's 90 degrees, but you can sleep out overnight with basically nothing on you. Maybe a sheet is all that you need, and the starry sky is overhead, and nobody else is out there. Places like Indian Gorge and Mountain Palm Springs and Bow Willow and those places. There's not too much vegetation. The hills are not too high, so you get a, pretty much a panorama of the whole sky. And then in the morning, you know, you don't stick around too long because the temperature's headed up toward 110.
If you're just joining us, this is Tree Huggers International. I'm Tommy Howe, and today we're featuring a tribute to our friend, outdoor writer, and guidebook author, Jerry Shadd, best known for his book, A Foot in a Field in San Diego County, who died of cancer on September 22nd. The conversations presented here today were recorded on two occasions for two shows, in July of 2008 and July of 2009. You can find the original versions of these shows at the Tree Huggers International website at treehuggersintl.com. Jerry's longtime astronomical photography website remains online, and you should really check that out. It is skyphoto.com, www.skyphoto.com. And also a tip of the hat to Jerry's longtime publishers at Wilderness Press, Jerry's final book, 50 Best Short Hikes in San Diego, was completed this summer with Jerry and his wife Peg involved in every step of the process, along with Susan Haynes and the team at Wilderness Press. Check out their website at wildernesspress.com. With his fascination with the nighttime sky, Jerry Shadd grew up to become an astronomy and physical sciences instructor, and he enjoyed a lengthy teaching career, particularly at San Diego Mesa College, where he taught for over 20 years. I asked Jerry how long he'd been teaching.
Since 1972, as a graduate student at San Diego State, and my teaching career really in the community colleges started in 1975 at San Diego City College. And eventually I landed a full-time position at Mesa College, where I am today. And I teach physical science as well as astronomy. You have what are called the natural sciences, colloquially called the hard sciences, as opposed from soft sciences like psychology or sociology. within the natural sciences, there's the biological end, and then there's the physical end. And so physical science is primarily physics, chemistry, earth sciences, astronomy.
Do you find your students get really excited about astronomy when things are going on, like the Phoenix lander on Mars right now? Is there an additional interest, or are kids even aware of that?
A huge variety. Some get tremendously interested and excited, and some could care less.
Have you ever done a field trip to any of the observatories around here and had your students see the nighttime sky and see what the astronomers see?
I teach a course at Mesa College called Practice in Observing, Astronomy 109. So every year, we're out. Sometimes we're camping in the desert, and we've been to Mount Laguna Observatory. That venue is currently closed to other school districts, but currently make use of the San Diego Astronomy Association's remote site called Tierra del Sol Observatory.
Where do you stand on the whole Pluto situation?
I'm so happy Pluto's been demoted. I'm really into simplicity. And, you know, in physical science or astronomy, when you talk about the classification of the solar system's planets, it's so easy now. You have four planets, the inner ones, terrestrial planets or Earth-like, and then you've got the four planets outside that, the gas giants or the Jovian planets, and it's as simple as that. And all the rest is miscellany.
Do you think astronomers in 1930 were sort of moving a little too fast to name Pluto a planet? Because that was at one time Planet X, making this strange gravitational pull on some
of
the
really.
Other planets.
Yes, Pluto was discovered by Clyde Tombaugh in 1930, and everybody got excited because there hadn't been a new planet discovered in something like a century. They had no idea of its size. You know, now we have much more physical data, and we understand it's a very small body that's part of that miscellaneous group I mentioned. That's just a reclassification. Happens all the time. Happens in botany and biology all the time. You know, what new classification makes most sense?
And you have a website for some of your astronomical photos, which is skyphoto.com.
Uh-huh.
And you've been taking photos of the sky since you were a kid.
I got very interested in astronomy when I was 12. Well, I had a textbook interest in it, or a magazine interest, you might say, in it from a very early age. But at age 12, I started sleeping out in the backyard in my hometown, San Jose, California, which was then, you know, a pretty small city. And I could see the Milky Way, and I got pretty enthralled about it and wanted to know what was up there. So my parents bought me a, you know, small but high-quality telescope, and I was just absolutely thrilled the day I got that because there was a beautiful first quarter moon, there was Saturn. Next day in school, I could think of nothing else but that beautiful image of Saturn in the eyepiece. So I was hooked. By age 15, I had hooked up with my friend who was the photographer for the school newspaper. He wasn't into astronomy, but he was into darkroom stuff. So I learned all the black and white printing, and the, you know, faster films of the day were black and white. So I got into this telescopic astrophotography things, and had pictures published in a national magazine, Sky and Telescope, when I was 15 years old, and kind of been enjoying that ever since.
A couple of the photographs on your website, right when you go to the page for your photographs, mm-hmm. There's some really remarkable ones that are taking over bodies of water, looks like lakes. Is that the Salton Sea? Is that around here?
It's been kind of a specialty of mine lately. Well, and for a long time, not so much the mug shots of celestial bodies, but rather the big scene, you know, the landscapes lit up by the moon or whatever and starry skies. Yeah, a lot of those pictures are local. You know, Laguna Meadow has temporary lakes, which at night are glassy smooth and you can get reflections. Other bodies of water. Most of my photography has taken place in Southern California, the night photography. As far as the place of regional consciousness goes, I think San Diego is pretty far up there. I do think that we, as a rule, you know, connect with our backcountry, as other big cities do not. Los Angeles, for example, I would say psychologically turns its back on its surrounding mountains for the most part. San Diego, Cuyamaca, Palomar, Anza Borrego, these are household names and places to most people. The media kind of lumps these areas into greater San Diego. So I think we're in pretty good shape as far as that goes. In that sense, we're similar to Seattle. You know, Seattle, it isn't just the city of Seattle. It's Puget Sound. It's Mount Rainier, which is part of their horizon. And they embrace that. And I think we embrace our backcountry much more than the average place around the country.
One of the most interesting areas that I learned about from reading some of your books is the Devil's Punch Bowl. Mm-hmm.
Which
is
I love that place.
Isn't that a strange place?
Uh-huh. And it's a fault-torn landscape would be a good description of it.
It seems to me there aren't many parks or public areas where you can really go and have features like a fault pointed out to you. But if you go to the Devil's Punch Bowl, obviously, you know, something's going on around here.
Yeah, that is just a crazy landscape, unless you understand the geomorphics, let's say, behind it. But I think, you know, there is more of a consciousness even in this area. There is a park being built downtown, and the reason why there's no building being put on it is because there is a trace of a fault through there. That's going to be part of the interpretive design of the little downtown pocket park. And even at Tecolote Canyon, the recreation center and natural park, there is, you know, interpretive displays now of the Rose Canyon Fault, the strand of it you see visible in the canyon side.
Jerry, how long have you been doing the Roma-Rama column for The Reader?
Since 1992.
And did they approach you about that?
You know what? I can't remember. I can't remember. The fact is, other than my first book that I had to go out and seek that work way back in the 70s, mostly publishers have come to me. I think in the case of the San Diego Reader, I was working for the San Diego edition of the LA Times. I had a weekly column. And then the Times folded in San Diego, the regional edition. And then I, you know, sent out some feelers, and I think I did. But maybe, I believe it was that, but then the publisher of The Reader said, yeah, we were going to contact you anyway, something like that.
Do you find when you're writing columns for The Reader, do you find that you sometimes go back to trails that you've covered before, or are you writing about things that are completely new to you?
Both. In fact, before I wrote for The Reader, there was LA Times, and then San Diego Home Garden way back to the early 80s. It's been working both ways. Hikes described in existing books have gone into columns in a revised version, and the opposite. Newspaper columns, magazine columns have been customized into trips in my books. It's been a rather efficient way to work.
When I had Jerry Shadd on the show in 2009 to talk about the newest edition of A Foot in the Field in Los Angeles County, we also talked about his enjoyment living downtown and using his car less, the benefit of living in multi-level buildings in order to prevent sprawl, and the work he was doing with Balboa Park to set up an official trail and multi-use path system. And a nice postscript to the story is Trail 43 at Balboa Park, which begins at 6th and Upas, is now being renamed the Jerry Shadd Memorial Trail.
I'm on the planning committee for the Balboa Park Trails Committee. So we're getting funding from San Diego Foundation, San Diego Track Club, other groups like that, to put together a assigned system of trails in Balboa Park. We already have two gateways in place. The gateways are the equivalent of trailheads.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you live close to one of them yourself, 6th and Upas.
Right.
Is the gateway there. Most of the trails are already in place. They can include portions of sidewalks and canyon paths. And, you know, Balboa Park is something like 2 square miles worth. There are plenty of places to walk. Each gateway, there's going to be 5 of them eventually. We only have 6th and Upas, Morley Field now. Golden Hills next. It's going to be Park Administration Building, Marston Point. These are the future gateways, the last couple I mentioned. There's going to be a total of about 17, 18 marked trails. Signage is very innovative, color-coded.
Yeah, I've seen the signs.
Yeah,
great.
Shapes have to do with, you know, the difficulty. Background color has to do with the gateways. So, yeah, you're seeing these signs, little signs, you know, 5x5 signs popping up all over the park. They've proven to be quite popular. In conjunction with this project, or actually following it, is the fact that the park has made great strides in cleaning up the formerly abandoned, or I should say, not well-maintained sections of the park. For example, along 163, it's friendly now for dog walkers and hikers, walkers, etc. The trails are the same. Sometimes it involves some improvement of the trail surface. For example, there's a trail that, it's called the Bridle Trail. DLE, having to do with the horses used to use these trails. And there used to be a very steep section that goes up to Juniper and Six, basically. They're building a really rustic, beautiful staircase out of native stone there. Oh. Well, granite stone from, I think, somewhere in San Diego County.
And you, in part, became involved in this because you moved back to downtown a couple of years ago.
I moved downtown from the East County suburbs. I lived in East County for 35 years. The main reason is that it was close to the mountains, you know, and for some other reasons. But I found out that where I live in downtown at Cortez Hill, it's only 7 minutes longer to get to the backcountry than where I used to live. And now I use my car half as much. So it's downtown San Diego is enormously walkable, and there's a ton of things to do down there.
Yeah,
including Balboa Park, which is the edge of which is, well, I jog a lot, so it's a three-minute jog to the southwest corner of Balboa Park. Multiple dwelling buildings make a lot of sense. My particular building has 199 units in it and on half a block, you know. And I love the vertical living. Very enjoyable, very comfortable place. Not a lot of room, but I don't have a lot of stuff. As I say, I use my car about half as much as I used to.
Jerry, your website is www.skyphoto.com. Folks can learn more about you there and also see a lot of your astronomical photographs.
Mm-hmm.
Skyphoto.com. When's school starting again?
Late August.
Take the students out to the usual places to see the heavens?
Very much looking forward to, again, teaching Astronomy 109, practice at observing. That's where we get out into the backcountry at night, sometimes overnight, the thing that you experienced at Sunrise Highway.
That was great, by the way. That was really amazing. And that laser pointer you had, I don't know if you could see it from the moon, but I certainly got the impression if you were in an airplane.
Yeah, that's one of the nicest tools now that astronomy teachers have, is a green laser pointer. What you were saying about, you know, where is a good place to hike, I just want to emphasize, it's not so much where, but it's when. I mean, I've had the most wonderful hikes in the summer in Anza Borrego. Now, is it at noontime? No. It's at the crack of dawn. I just think it's great to go out there at 4 or 5 o'clock in the afternoon, come back at 10 o'clock. In the meantime, do some hiking in the twilight, do some hiking under the full moon. Watch out for rattlesnakes. Believe me, there's many ways to enjoy adventure in San Diego County.
Just be flexible about the time you're going
right.
to go.
And know what you're doing. You know, don't go too far away from help if you're in the desert in the summertime. But nocturnal explorations are just wonderful out there.
Always have the tennis sessions.
And be careful. Bring lots of water.
Jerry Shad, it has just been great having you on the program today. Thank you for coming by and joining us for Tree Huggers International. We'll hope to stay in touch and hope we can touch base next time you've got a new publication coming out or a revised publication coming out. Jerry Shad, thanks for coming by on Tree Huggers International.
Okay, thanks a lot, Tommy.
And that's going to wrap things up for this special edition of Tree Huggers International. Many thanks again to our friend, Jerry Shad. Check out Jerry's photos at skyphoto.com. Special thanks to Jim Holman, Leslie Valonia, and Steve Sorensen from the San Diego Reader for their thoughts. You can find more on Jerry Shad at the Romarama page at the San Diego Reader website at sandiegoreader.com. And again, there's more on Jerry Shad at wildernesspress.com as well. For more information on Tree Huggers International and to hear previous editions of the show, including the full episodes of Jerry Shad's two appearances on Tree Huggers International, go to the Tree Huggers International website at treehuggersintl.com. This is Tommy Howe for Tree Huggers International. We'll be back same time next Sunday morning with another take on natural science and environmental affairs as we continue our mission to preserve parks, wilderness, and special places on Tree Huggers International. Thanks for making us a part of your Sunday morning, and enjoy the rest of your weekend. Be well.